Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Bob Stocking from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And if you're like me, you've got a shirt that says, I miss tennis, and a heart that says, my favorite podcast is the Tennis Podcast.
Oh, Bob, thank you so much. He misses tennis. He missed tennis. It's past tense now because it's back, as are we. Bob, thank you so much for your support in our Kickstarter at the end of last year and helping us to produce all of these shows, which I think number about 80 so far this year, Catherine. You enjoyed it?
It's quite a lot, isn't it? I definitely enjoyed Bob. A lot of love for Bob. Bob Stocking is an excellent name. It sounds like a character in a rom-com.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. Mm. Good work, Bob.
Or a character in a sort of It's a Wonderful Life type film.
Yeah.
All good options.
Yeah, quite the gamut of options from Bob there. The I Miss Tennis t-shirt is no more, folks. You can't get that anymore. We've discontinued it because tennis is back.
Do you think they're going to start appearing on eBay for hugely inflated prices?
Well, if they do...
And the product description will say, only 400 of these were made. Yeah. Limited edition. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if they do, make sure that you give your proceeds, your profits, to the COVID-19 response fund, which is exactly what we did. And we raised £308.75, which I paid today. So thank you to everybody who bought a T-shirt, which is fantastic. We now have a replacement. We have the I Love Tennis T-shirt in many different colours.
It'll never go out of fashion.
No, unless you just suddenly decide, do you know what? I'm just not into it anymore. I don't like this knocking a ball
around. Does that ever happen? Like, if you're into a sport, does anybody ever, like, just stop being into a sport?
Yeah.
I feel like you're into something from childhood, and then that's it.
I was the biggest...
You're going to say wrestling, aren't you?
Yeah,
it's not a sport. It's not a sport. That's entertainment. That's like going off... you know, Love Island or something.
No, because it became entertainment when it started calling itself the World Wrestling Entertainment. I was in the WWF days, you see, and it was different then.
Got sued by the World Wildlife Fund.
Probably, something like that. But yeah, I went off it. So kind of...
Yeah, but I think that's just growing up. I think that's different.
Now might be the biggest test.
Yeah.
Like, if you can get through this period still loving your sport, you're probably... gonna always
yeah.
love it.
I can feel myself going off championship football if things
oh if things I'm well into that
continue the way they are going.
I can't remember too much more about it now,
but, god,
you know,
okay. move this show along, James.
Okay, yeah, well, yeah, we missed tennis, we love tennis. Tennis is back, and it is back courtesy of two tournaments in Lexington and Prague, which have taken place over the last week. That meant that Catherine Whittaker was presenting tennis on television once more. Matt, round of applause for Catherine. How good was she? Huh?
Splendid. You've made me do a round of applause while holding a microphone in one hand. This is very, very difficult. But Catherine made presenting telly look very, very easy, as she does.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it, Catherine?
Yeah, I really did. I mean, total shock to the system. I had to wear non-elasticated waists. I had to get up before 9 a.m. and work to do work. I mean, a lot of that work was watching tennis and talking about it, which is no hardship. I don't expect you to get the violins out for me, but it did take a couple of days of adjustment. And I did peruse my telly wardrobe and veer towards the items that did have an elasticated waist. Mm. So
no longer in the suitcase, which now is standing up. Yeah, it's been the cobwebs.
No, I had to
removed.
Repack the suitcase.
Oh.
To take to Stockley Park, containing my telly wardrobe. Yeah, my suitcase was only unpacked for a week.
Stockley Park is where they do the video assistant referee job, isn't it, for the football?
Yes, I've had a VAR seminar at Stockley Park.
Have you? Mm. Oh, from when you
and,
did your
and
football
the,
work.
The BBC snooker coverage was coming out of an adjacent studio at the time, so I was mingling with Ken Doherty and Stephen Hendry all week, so blockbuster.
Brilliant. It was brilliant. And tennis pundits. Catherine was presenting Amazon Prime Video's coverage of Lexington. We will talk about that. We'll talk about Prague. We're going to be talking about the US Open, people that are playing, people that are not playing, other pullouts this week. We're also going to talk to Dan Evans, the British number one, on life in the bubble. He arrived over the weekend and I had a chat with him last night, so we'll hear from him about what it's like over there, because we can't go this year, which is going to be a bit weird. But at least it looks like it is going ahead from a sport playing, tennis playing perspective. At least there will be something for everybody to watch. But the event itself in Lexington, am I right in thinking that that was put together in about a month?
Yeah, I believe 4 weeks was the timeline. So John Sanders was the tournament director over there. They had some help from Octagon, the management company, and they have in the past hosted a challenger event there. So they do have some experience of hosting tournaments, but at a very, very, you know, with all due respect, low level. And they threw together this tour level event at 4 weeks' notice, which had the eyes of the tennis world on it. The top seed tennis club, which is positioned adjacent to a retirement home and with a fairly main road running across the back of the centre court, along which there were removals vans and cement mixers and pickup trucks interrupting the day's tennis frequently. And it was all delightfully quaint and so apt somehow, you know, because tennis is more humble now upon its return and tennis players are having to be more humble. And so it felt kind of really perfect that tennis's return. I know we had Palermo last week and we had Prague concurrently, which is a more established tour event. But to me, it just felt really perfect that it was as humbling as it was as a setting, and even more perfect that you had kind of tennis's biggest superstars of the moment there, Serena Williams, Coco Gauff, and Venus Williams, who emerged as a superstar once again.
It was one of the most extraordinary things I've ever watched, I think, watching Serena Williams come out onto that court, as you said, with cement mixers, fire engines going past in the background. It kind of reminded me of a third round FA Cup match when, like, a Man U go away to some kind of non-league team and Wayne Rooney's crammed in the smallest dressing room you can imagine and comes out onto the pitch and it's this incredibly humbling experience, and yet everyone's just so pleased to have them there and to see them. And there was a kind of romance to it, even though everything was stripped down and stripped away. I think anyone who watched that will remember that image for a long, long time of, as you said, Serena, Gauff, Venus, just at this little tennis club in Kentucky. It was pretty remarkable.
Serena said it was a nostalgic experience. She said it reminded her of her junior days. Serena and Venus didn't really play juniors, though, did they? They famously were held back from juniors and then unleashed on the tennis world. But I understand the point still stands. I think that, you know, it's reminiscent of those days when you're coming up on the tennis tour and trying to establish yourself. And it's, you know, although most of the tennis we watch has big crowds and lots of atmosphere, the majority of professional tennis matches are played in settings more akin to the Topsy Tennis Club in Lexington than to the Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York.
Let's start with Serena, shall we? Because although she didn't win the tournament, she was the story coming into it. I mean, tennis returning was the biggest story, and it did appear to go pretty much without a hitch. Didn't hear of any talk of any positive tests over the course of the week. I mean, I think it's a huge triumph, really, for the event to have put itself on in that way. And Serena coming out, am I right in saying she lost the first set of her first match? And there was that moment where you just thought, crikey, she looks rusty. But she got herself together pretty quickly. And okay, she didn't win the tournament, but I would have thought she's pretty satisfied with what she put up this last week.
Yeah, I think she'll have been pleased that her opening two rounds did go to three sets. I think she was looking for competition and looking for match play rather than wins. I mean, obviously she wanted to win the tournament. You can't turn that tap off. But I think it will have pleased her that she improved over the course of the matches. It was interesting. I found that she was rusty, but she was really aggressive, playing really aggressive tennis. And her policy was to try and hit through the rustiness, to hit through those cobwebs. And it kind of did pan out. So Bernarda Pera in the opening round, by the third set, she was hitting her stride.
She's a tricky lefty, isn't she?
Yeah, tricky lefty, definitely. And by that stage, she knew that Venus was waiting in the second round, I think. Or no, maybe she didn't. Maybe it was the other way around. She knew that Venus was possibly waiting in the second round. And I always think that plays on their mind when they know that matchup is on or a possibility.
It was going to be Azarenka, if not Venus, wasn't it, because of that matchup?
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, look, I think the match with Shelby Rogers, which is the quarterfinal when Serena lost. Now, Greg Rozetsky in the Prime Video coverage disagreed with me about this, but I think tennis-wise it was all right. I think Shelby Rogers is a woman quite transformed, really, and was very impressive and does have the sort of game that can trouble Serena. But I think it will just be a little chip at the back of her mind that she won that first set 6-1. She was in strong control and she let it be wrestled from her. And I think at this stage, losing tight matches like that, especially from winning positions, is not mentally the baggage that she needs going into the US Open. I think, you know, mental baggage and pressure is something that has been a factor in preventing her from crossing the line to 24. And I think that, yeah, that's not what she needs. But tennis-wise, I think she, you know, 7 out of 10 by the end of the tournament. And I think she'll be okay with that.
Mm. I thought the most encouraging tennis I saw from her was in a couple of moments against Venus, when she really seemed to go up a couple of gears suddenly when she really needed to. And it was just illustrative of the fact that those gears are still there and she can find them when she needs to.
It was that backhand down the line and the crouched fist pump celebration, wasn't it? That was the "here is Serena" moment.
Yes, it was her statement. And it was a strange match against Rogers. She seemed to stop being able to read Rogers' serve suddenly, sort of halfway through the match. She barely got in any return games as that match went on. And I think, to me, she looked quite tired. And I think she ran out of a little bit of energy. As you said, there's two quite grueling three setters to start the week, and then she found herself in another one. And I know that's to be expected, I think. I think it was also quite a difficult court to come back on because, quite refreshingly, it was quite quick. And I think it was quite difficult maybe to find a little bit of rhythm initially. And she was rusty in that first match, but she did get better. So overall, I think a fairly encouraging week for Serena, I felt. I didn't expect her to win the tournament. So the fact that she won a couple of matches.
Who did you expect to win the tournament, Matt?
Well, let's not go there. Let's not go there. But, well, I mean, I didn't. I didn't really expect anyone to win it, so I plucked Ons Jabeur out of the air, and
it was better plucking than David did.
Yeah, we've had two shocking weeks. I mean, you know, we talk about the return of tennis players and the rust that they might feel. Well, you can extend that to predictions of tennis results, because I think so far that's 2 weeks in which we've put the newsletter out with the predictions in, and my player has already gone out before the tennis podcast newsletter has been sent. Arina Sabalenka, I went for, who played Coco Gauff in a really fun match. I mean, it was all over the place, wasn't it?
It really was.
I think it went 5-2 to one player, and then 6-5 to the other, and then, you know, it was all over the shop before Coco Gauff eventually got the win. And you went for Gauff, didn't you, Catherine? So you have minor bragging rights.
Did, because I think at the stage when we submitted our predictions, I had already watched her first round match, which was, and I can't remember who that was against. It was against a qualifier, and it was three sets. That Sabalenka match was the second round. Dollarhide, yes. Dollarhide. And I was very impressed. She has improved. She has spent the last 5 months transforming herself into an activist for social justice and a better tennis player. And that blows my mind. She wasn't able to sustain it in that semi-final against Jennifer Brady.
Perhaps not that surprising, because the round before is when she beat Ons Jabeur, who was just playing impeccable tennis for an hour and a bit and was a set and 4-2 up. And it seemed as though Gauff basically exhausted most of her reserves in order to turn that around.
Well, and found some more reserves, because she was learning on the job against Ons Jabeur. I found that match absolutely fascinating, because she was bamboozled for a set and a half. She was a set and a breakdown, and it's a bit of a kind of rite of passage for a young, inexperienced player playing somebody like Ons Jabeur. Because when will she ever have come up against somebody with the tricks that Ons Jabeur has? You know, it's a completely different proposition to anything she'll have faced in her young career. And then you could see her figuring it out, and she started to almost kind of mimic her. She was throwing her game back at her and kind of hitting shots that I've not seen Coco Gauff hit before. And seeing somebody, you know, obviously you talk about young players learning on the macro scale, but seeing them on the micro scale, learning before your very eyes within a match and implementing that learning as she did in the deciding set, I found mind-boggling. And I wonder, I don't think she looked physically tired in the semi-final against Jennifer Brady. I'm not sure what it would take to make her look physically tired, because she is the most extraordinary athletic specimen, but I do wonder if she was a bit mentally tired after the week and the competitive outlay that she'd had to put out there, because she was constantly fighting back from losing positions, and playing Ons Jabeur is a mind scramble.
Someone who knows I work in tennis but doesn't know anything about tennis asked me who my favorite player to watch was the other day, and I sort of instinctively just said Ons Jabeur, and of course they have no idea who Ons Jabeur is at all. So then I sort of had to find myself kind of explaining why I like watching her play, and just, it was what you said, she just comes up with shots that other people do not come up with, and that is so exciting to watch. But Gauff managed to make that match a bit of a scrap, and I back Gauff in tight situations, which is an extraordinary thing to say about a 16-year-old, because normally you would expect experience to help in those situations, and you would expect maybe a bit of fragility to come into her game, but it doesn't. She gets tougher when it gets tighter, and I don't know, I'm just so impressed, because she seems to be taking it all in her stride as well, because I mean, the thing about hype is it's that gap, isn't it, between what you've achieved and the way you're talked about. And she is talked about and covered like she is in a way, a kind of multi-slam champion. She gets that kind of coverage and exposure. So then when she has a week like this, where she gets to the semi-finals, she could be expected to think, oh, well, I'm not living up to that kind of talk and that kind of hype. But she doesn't see it like that. She knows that she is ticking off a lot of boxes as she's going, and she's doing it kind of in her own time. She kind of exists outside, I think, of the hype that surrounds her, I find, and she's kind of comfortable with her place where she is at the moment and making little steps. And just a week like this where she, as you said, has these wins where she's having incredible comebacks in matches and showing us things she hasn't shown before. And yeah, just a really, really positive week. And she's now played two events on the tour this year and lost to the eventual champion both times. So, I mean, really good players, informed players, are the only ones who are beating Coco Gauff at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, she was excellent for the most part, and another positive step for her. Just want to rewind a little bit to the start of that tournament. First of all, to talk about the win for Venus Williams over Victoria Azarenka, because as jaw-dropping as some of the tennis we saw from Gauff and Jabeur, who, incidentally, the way I think of Ons Jabeur is she just makes me smile as a viewer.
She's a joy to watch. She spent 2 days, I should mention, just if this is the last time we talk about Ons Jabeur this episode, spent 2 days getting to Lexington. She flew from Tunis to Paris, then Paris to, well, it should have been New York, but her flight got diverted due to a storm to Detroit. Sat on the tarmac in Detroit for 7 hours, then eventually got to fly in to New York, where she picked up a hire car and drove the, I think, 12 hours, maybe even more, to Lexington, Kentucky, during which journey she got pulled over by the police and had to talk herself out of a speeding ticket. That story is courtesy of the journalist Reem Abalil, and it's quite extraordinary. I was so pleased that she didn't go out in the first round, because imagine going to those efforts to get somewhere and then after a day having to go on to the next
And she
place.
Did lose the first set. She lost the first set
she
in 29 minutes.
Yeah.
After that.
And she looked so not off. She looked like, oh, for goodness sake.
Do you not know what I've been through to get here?
And I really sympathised very hard with that. But anyway, she pulled it around
and she made a decent week out of it. But Venus Williams also she just played uplifting tennis in the first round. She played tennis that I thought was probably in the past, to be honest, against Victoria Azarenka. She absolutely walloped her and showed every little bit of the kind of trademark signals of her game that we have been reliving over the last 6 weeks.
Well, on Prime this week, we spent a lot of time talking about Venus Williams and the fact that she has emerged from the 5 month break with a brand new service motion. And I still don't think we've talked about it enough. Venus Williams is 40 years old. She has won 7 Grand Slam titles with her serve. And she spent lockdown developing an entirely new service motion. I honestly couldn't believe my eyes. I'm still floored by it and in awe, in total awe of that fact.
I mean, I was going to say it's the most excited I've been watching tennis for a long time. Obviously, there hasn't been tennis to watch. But like, genuinely, when I saw that, I was suddenly so excited. It was like, well, this is new. And then also she's got her new service motion is very obviously different. She's also tweaked her forehand. She's changed the take back on that. And it looked way more secure with a lot more spin on the ball, I thought, her forehand. And yeah, she's sort of come out of lockdown younger, and she was glowing the whole week. She was really chatty in her on-court interview that she did after beating Azarenka. She was, yeah, as you said, uplifting, but also just so impressive, as you said, that she would take the time to actually think, right, how can I improve as a tennis player, when she really doesn't need to be doing that, but she finds it within herself to do it. It was so, so joyous to watch Venus Williams this week. And I actually thought she played really well against Serena as well. As I said, there were a couple of moments where Serena raised her game, but overall I thought Venus probably was the more consistent, better player throughout the match, and could have won it.
I think that might have been, of the 31 matches those two have played against each other, I think it might have been my favourite. And it's in Lexington with no crowd. And I think that that was part of it. It just felt intimate. It didn't feel like an event the way it normally does. You could just concentrate on what wonderful tennis players they are. And I've always been fascinated by how do their games actually match up when they face each other. And I've never really felt that I've got a handle on it, because I've never known, well, how much is this about a tennis match, and how much is this about being stressed out because I'm playing my sister who I love, and all the razzmatazz that's around the match. And suddenly you'd got it laid bare right in front of you, just two players playing tennis against one another, two greats of the game. And I really loved it. I felt like I wasn't distracted by anything. I want crowds back. I want all of you to be able to go to tennis tournaments. But I also do get something out of just watching these crowdless matches as well. I think there is something to it. It elevates the tension in some ways and just makes me look at it in a different way. I just hope, my big takeaway, I think, from Lexington is that I just hope that the TV producers are given license to raise the levels of the court effects, put some extra mics in. I want to hear everything. You know, Catherine was doing a great job of just introducing the match until the point of when the players came to the net for the coin toss, so you could hear the conversation that was going on. That's what I want to hear. I want all that stuff just raised up. And they'd got the kind of WTA's new courtside coaching thing, hadn't they, where players could just be spoken to by their coach mid-match from the stands.
You're allowed to be heckled by your coach from the stands, but you're not allowed to go over and have a grown-up chat with them.
Which is a bit
which
weird.
Which I sort of love.
I think they've got to change that. I mean, there was one moment where Coco Gauff went over to her dad and was just told off by the umpire for going over to him. And it was confusing to me.
It was one of those situations where it felt like no one really knew the rule. It felt like the umpire wasn't quite sure about it either. Now, I might be doing her a disservice there, but she wasn't explaining it particularly clearly. And that might just be because the rule isn't clear and it is this kind of grey area. But it felt like if you're going to do it, just do it properly and let the player go over to them. I felt, and as you said, have mics to pick up that conversation. I agree with you, David. There was something specific to Venus Serena to why it worked with no crowds. Generally, I felt I really missed crowds, and I will continue to miss them, I think, because it, you know, there's nothing better than an amazing winner punctuated with emotion and passion from a crowd. And yet with Venus and Serena, I think sometimes the crowd can be a little awkward or not quite know what to feel when they're watching those two play each other. And as you said, we got this intimate experience, and it was like kind of watching them up close on the practice courts back in the day kind of thing, even though they've kind of travelled this long road to get to where they are. And it kind of worked for that match. Generally, I would say that it is a diminished viewing experience without fans. Of course it is. And I would, like you, like to see the mics picking up more. But yeah, for that one occasion, I'm quite glad we got Venus Serena like that. But, you know,
beggars can't be choosers, Matt.
Indeed. It was kind of the best of it.
I'm still fascinated to see what happens when we get to the Western Southern Open and then the US Open, to see what they do, whether they add any crowd effects, whether they add any virtual crowds in the stands the way the NBA has, which has been an interesting one because they've taken what appear to be live videos of those people who've applied or paid in order to be the virtual crowd from their own homes and got them in on a video stream, and they're just dotting them around on what would have been the seats. You know, I wonder what the US Open will do. We haven't been given any information yet about that, so we'll wait and see. The two women we haven't mentioned yet in Lexington are the two finalists. I think you briefly mentioned Jennifer Brady, who won the whole thing without dropping a set. And most of the sets she won really, really easily. Was it Jill Teichman from Switzerland, who reached both singles and doubles finals, who she met in the final. Teichmann had a fantastic week. I remember Matt mentioning earlier in the week that she had won Prague, was it, last year?
And she won, Palermo.
She won Prague and Palermo last year, which obviously the two events that have taken place in Europe on the clay. And really smart, I think, that she's probably realised that with the new ranking system, there's actually not that much point playing those events, because those points will stay on her ranking. She doesn't need to defend them. They will just stay on. So she's gone over to Lexington, where she can only gain, and she's made it all the way through to her, I think it was her first hard court quarterfinal, semi-final and final.
Correct, yeah. Mm.
And she was a revelation, I mean, because she kept saying people only think I can play on clay. And I was like, yeah, I did. But actually, she was great. She was such a strategizer on the court, and really, really intelligent. And, you know, she didn't have the toughest route to the final, but she beat everyone in straight sets to get to the final and was just really, really impressive.
Jennifer Brady was just awesome all week, though, wasn't she? I mean, she absolutely smashed her way past everybody in her wake. And she's been around for a couple of years now and has been a good player, top 50 player or just about. But this was another level entirely, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely time to reframe the way we all think about Jennifer Brady. And maybe we haven't, well, almost definitely, we all haven't spent very much time thinking about Jennifer Brady, because she's just been one of those players that's there and kind of plays to their ranking, which bounces between probably 50 and 100. I think she briefly dipped outside the top 100. She'd have had a good career, making a good living, nice life probably. And she decided, actually before lockdown, the end of last season, she decided that wasn't enough for her and she wanted to strive for more. She made the decision to move to Germany to work with a German coach, Michael Dessera, spent her off season there, completely transforming herself. I know sort of the obvious observation is that she's lost a lot of weight, but I think it's slightly dangerous just to talk about it in those terms, because we've seen a lot of players that are just drop a lot of weight and it does not make them better tennis players. And actually that worries me. She obviously has dropped a considerable amount of weight, but she's remained strong. And that, I don't think that's easy to do. I think that's a very fine balance to find. And mentally and technically, her fitness coach has obviously done a great job, because she still looks so strong and so athletic and so perfectly balanced. And the fact that she's transformed herself has obviously given her a different mindset and a different confidence. And she was unshakable this week, completely unshakable. She's obviously got those big weapons in the serve and the forehand. And I heard her compared on social media after her first couple of matches to a sort of female Jack Sock. But I think that's unfair on Jennifer Brady, because with apologies to Jack Sock, her backhand is better than Jack Sock's. And that reminds me of Mary Carrillo. You know, you've got to, if you've got a relative weakness, you've got to be able to disguise it. And I think that backhand doesn't feel like a huge weakness. I think she's the real deal now. I really do. I think she'll be top 20 once the rankings get back up and running. I feel for her that the rankings are in the situation that they are, because she would be a player that would be rocketing, I think. And she's going to be held back from that. But, you know, it's interesting looking back at those results at the start of the year, that win over Ash Barty in Brisbane. I now view that differently. At the time, I looked at it totally from a Barty perspective. Start of the season, pressure of playing at home as a world number one, you know, a blip for Barty rather than the emergence of Jennifer Brady. But I think we are looking at the emergence of Jennifer Brady.
I went a week early on Jennifer Brady in our newsletter. I went for a Jennifer Brady stat, and the stat was that five of her 10 top 20 wins in her whole career came in the first 2 months of this season. As you said, she beat Ash Barty, she beat Vondrousova, she beat Svitolina, Muguruza, I think. Loads of really great wins. And then suddenly to have that momentum stopped in the way it did, it's even more impressive that she's managed to kind of pick up where she left off. And it is interesting how she's compared more to male players. Like, I think because that is the way she hits the ball. She hits it with a lot more spin than a lot of the players on the WTA Tour do on her forehand. It's, it also slightly reminds me of Kyle Edmund, the way her sort of forehand stands out above her backhand. But again, I think her backhand is probably better than Kyle Edmund's as well. And she also seems just like the kind of person that you would want to root for. I quite enjoyed her her gentle ribbing of Sloane Stephens on Twitter this week when she said, "Oh, finally, Sloane Stephens has followed me on Twitter." like after all this time, it's taken her winning, you know, winning in Lexington to get Sloane Stephens' attention. But that's kind of the point as well. Like she's made, as you said, she's made herself stand out now. I always sort of had her in my mind as one of lots of good American players, but now she really stands out, and not quite to the level that Kenin has done, obviously, but Kenin has had a similar trajectory, you know, sort of faster and bigger and scaled up from what Jennifer Brady's doing, obviously, by winning the Australian Open. But it's a similar kind of thing. She's making herself stand out from the crowd, and yeah, it's just deeply, deeply impressive.
And it's not impossible that she may end up having a big cut through a draw, maybe not as far as Kenin, but a significant one. You could see her game hurting a lot of people. And I mean, use the phrase how you end up comparing her almost to a male player style wise. And she actually used that reference herself in one of her press conferences. She said, "I grew up playing with boys and I developed a spin on my ball as a result of that, because that's how they were hitting the ball, with much more topspin." And it kind of reminds me a little bit probably of an Andreescu forehand, in as much as it's powerful, heavy, but it's got a lot of cover on it. It's got that loop with it as well, so that it's not going to spray in the same way, I don't think.
Yeah, there's definitely that margin for error, isn't there? It's interesting, the courts in Lexington, all the pundits were remarking on it all week, took spin more than the most courts on tour. I think that's why Jill Teichman performed so well there, because it's kind of a hard court that plays like a clay court. I'm sure Dominic Thiem would have absolutely loved it. So it'd be interesting to see those that were successful in Lexington transferring that to a slightly less bouncy court. I feel like there's probably a more technical tennis-y term than bouncy, but I'm going with bouncy. Yeah, it'll be interesting. So I think Jennifer Brady's game will cut through for sure, but it'll be interesting.
Just as a final point on Lexington, I should mention the doubles as well, which Teichman was involved in alongside Marie Buzkova, who beat Johanna Konta earlier in the week. It was won by Hayley Carter and Luisa Stefani, who were just an irresistible doubles pairing. It was such exciting doubles that they played, and they won that title. But something that really struck me in the Brady-Teichman final was when Brady was closing in on the first set, and for the first time in the whole week, she just wobbled a little bit mentally. You could see the tension come over her, and it reminded me why tour tennis for us and Grand Slam tennis for us is what it's all about. The difference between that and any of the exhibition tennis that we've seen, where you just can feel on their behalf the stress and what it means to them, and you can't recreate that in another format. And we love the scoring system as it is, certainly as people within the sport, but that moment just encapsulated it for me. That was ultimate.
Yeah, you can strip tennis down to its barest parts, as it kind of was in Lexington, and yet the pressure of serving out a set, a match, was still there, and it still felt. And Jennifer Brady was going for her first WTA title, and all those things still meant a lot. And you could feel it watching her. Yeah, I agree. It was a reminder. We didn't necessarily need a reminder, because we know those things to be true, but it was nice to have it, yeah.
Meanwhile, in Prague, Simona Halep won the title, beat Elise Mertens in the final. Great week for Halep, who looks really just thrilled to be back. She looked comfortable there. But at the end, she wasn't prepared to give a definitive on whether she was going to play the US Open or not. She says she will tell us all today. In fact, she said she will make her decision today. Now, whether she has made that decision or whether there was any room for movement, I don't know. By the time you're listening to this, we may well have that answer. But it is interesting seeing, I mean, obviously she was playing on clay, so my gut feeling is that she would just continue in Europe and prepare for the French Open. But this week, just another reminder about how she is the perfect clay court player in terms of style on that surface. I think if you wanted to put together a player on a clay court, you would design them like Simona Halep.
I think the final against Mertens was the highest quality match I've seen since the restart. And it reminded me of how good Halep is on clay, as you said, because I think of Mertens as kind of a similar player to Halep in many ways. And in one respect, she's got an advantage on Halep in that she has an additional injection of pace, especially on her backhand down the line. And Halep can do that, but Mertens can do it even better. And Mertens started that match brilliantly, breaking serve, two love up. And then Halep made these adjustments and you realised that actually she's a far better mover than Elise Mertens and she's far more secure on her forehand and she started hitting it with quite a lot more spin and manoeuvring the ball around. And she won seven games in a row in the middle of the match and just took the match away from Mertens. And yeah, it was a reminder that even if she doesn't go to the US Open, she will probably be the Roland Garros favourite. And it's another example of a player picking up from where she left off. I mean, we've talked so much about whether this break might curtail people's momentum. Well, Jennifer Brady was in great form and Simona Halep was in great form. She'd just won Dubai, so she's now on a very long nine-match winning streak. and yeah, she was kind of shaky at the start of the week, some real rust. She took, I think, seven match points to win her first match. Got in a bit of trouble in a couple of other matches, but then by the end she was really flying. I don't want to say whether or not she will go to the US Open because, as you said, that news will probably already be out. But I think she's also talked about New York being quite stressful for her in the past and not necessarily embracing the atmosphere, because it is a very unique atmosphere in New York at the US Open. It is loud and in your face, and I'm not sure she's always...
Not anymore.
She's not relished that, and it's not like that anymore. And that was an interesting point that was raised again and again about Serena, how she talked about how relaxing she found playing without crowds. And, you know, possibly, again, speculating here, but not having a crowd in New York might be favourable to Serena. You know, we've seen her get stressed in New York a lot. And she talked this week about how calm she did feel on the court. Now, obviously, the stakes are raised with the US Open. But I just wonder how much the crowd makes her stressed in New York and how much of it is herself. I'm not sure, but we might find out with Serena playing in front of no fans in the US Open. I think that's an interesting point to watch out for when we get there.
And since we last spoke a week ago for the US Open, we know that Novak Djokovic intends to be there. He signed up to play. He's also going to play the Western Southern Open. He's going to play doubles there as well. Sadly, Bianca Andreescu is not. It's difficult to know how much of that is down to injury and how much of it is down to concerns over the coronavirus. She certainly doesn't appear fully fit from the way she's spoken. But that does mean that both of the reigning champions will not be defending their titles. And yesterday we heard news that Kei Nishikori has tested positive for COVID-19 as well in Florida, which means he's not making the trip for what would have been the Cincinnati event in New York. He does intend to get further tests and hopes to be able to play the US Open, but we'll have to wait and see. Let's hope he makes a swift recovery. But that is the next tournament on the agenda for everybody. It is time to get into the US Open, the New York bubble, which has been created in order to run these two back-to-back events. Cincinnati, held in New York, is due to take place at the end of this week. I think it starts, the prime coverage starts on Saturday. So when would the qualifying be? Is that Thursday and Friday?
Yes.
I think so, yes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So over the last 24 hours, we've been seeing all sorts of pictures of, as Riley Opelka said it, every tennis player imaginable wearing a mask in an airport and going off for their tests. One of those players that has gone to New York over the last 24 hours is Dan Evans, the British number one male player. And I gave him a call last night to ask him what the first 24, 36 hours in the bubble have been like. Starting with the airport, which is actually the first time he's gone to an airport and taken a flight since coming back from Indian Wells 5 months ago. So here's what it was like.
Yeah, I mean, it was empty. The airport was pretty, it was like the whole airport was shut pretty much. A lot of shops were shut. No big crowds or anything, so... And obviously way less flights, leaving. Aircraft was dead. I mean, there was three people sat where we were sat. I'm not quite sure what the other part of the plane was like, but in our part there was three people, so it was pretty empty. It's pretty strange, and then you've got to wear your mask the whole time in the flight. They served us some food, and then that was pretty much that.
And where were you flying out of? Was it Heathrow?
Yeah, I actually flew Heathrow to Dublin to do immigration in Dublin. I just thought it was just a bit easier to do it that way, and. We flew Heathrow, Dublin, New York. Yeah.
And who did you fly with? You with Mark? Anybody else?
Yeah, I took Mark and Alia.
Uh-huh.
So, it was, the necessities pretty much, you can only have two rooms at the tournament. Yesterday's obviously it's a pretty different experience to get to a tournament and sit in the room for, 24 hours waiting for results.
So from the picture, I saw a picture Pat Cash posted of, I think like a lobby converted into a testing room or something like that. And then is that right? And then you sort of get a test and then you've got to go back to your room and you just basically just got to stay there.
Yeah, I mean, we were just, I was a bit, because it was obviously not normal. I was a bit like, geez, are we going to be able to order food? Obviously, you can. Sounds stupid, but, you know, you're obviously a bit worried and stuff. And then, you know, when we got there, they were helpful. Like, you could order food in and then player services would bring it up to your room. You just couldn't come out. To say you got an Uber Eats, you just couldn't pick it up. They would pick it up for you and then bring it to you. You know, strings and stuff like that. Before we went up to the room, somebody asked, did we want them done for tomorrow? So they could take stuff for you. They did pretty much everything, you know, you could ask of them. Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, like a guy just said to us, listen, just make sure you don't, please try not to come out of your room. And, you know, that was it really. Just, you know, left you with the final shot of that. And then said they can do whatever you need, really. If you need anything, they can get it. And that was that. And, you know, so probably, I think, 10:30 yesterday till this morning, that was. And then obviously you check your phone in the morning hoping you're negative, and then about 9 o'clock we all found out.
So once you find out you're negative, can you just go about your business?
No, you sort of need to get, well, yeah, but you need to get accredited, and then they cut your band off. You get given a blue band, you know, which I'm guessing means you're on quarantine. And then, yeah, and then it's, you know, normal stuff. Then I think, you know, we got breakfast, you know, you get accredited in the hotel, breakfast, and then we sort of you know, it's actually rained here today, so it's a bit of a different day as well, you know, to sort of everyone going out and getting on the court, you know, people are on different timetables as well with, you know, arriving different times, not getting results back and stuff. So it's, you know, it's a bit of a strange day, but once you sort of got in the flow of things, it was back to normal, you know.
And is this you and Mark, you both got to get tested, is that right?
Yeah, and Ali, everyone who's in that hotel is tested. Yeah.
So, I mean, if we were to go back a year when you were, I mean, I know it's a week, it would have been a week or two maybe later. Yeah. But if you'd arrived on the day you arrived to New York last year, what would you have been doing?
You know, well, the day I arrived, I'd have, you know, gone out and had a look around. Then obviously, most of the time, the day you arrive, you don't do much, you know. So then,
but this would have been Manhattan, as opposed to, I mean,
exactly. That's what I mean. So like, you would have gone out and had a look around because you've got time, whereas, you know, yesterday you had time, but you had no time to do anything. There was nothing to do. So that was obviously a little strange. You obviously got urges to sort of, you know, come on, let's go. And then you realise you can't. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's just a bit different, isn't it? But it's a very small thing in the grand scheme of things to just, I'm not saying get used to it, but, you know, it wasn't the worst thing in the world.
Where is this hotel relative to Manhattan?
It's
and the
long. No, it's probably 45 from the court. It's in Long Island. Yeah, so it's not close, but it's not. But, you know, I mean, Manhattan can take an hour some days, maybe more.
Mm. What's around?
Nothing really. You know, they've done a decent job with the hotel. It's a big lobby. Yeah, they've put a big garden in place so people can sit outside. And I actually haven't looked at much else, so I'm not quite sure if there is anything else.
What about the site itself? How does it compare to what it normally is?
The site itself actually looks a bit bigger, if that makes sense, because there's obviously, you know, now they're putting in a lot of, you know, like gyms and stuff, so there's actually more space because, you know, people on site. You can sit places you never thought you'd sit before. Yeah, so it's pretty good. I think they've done a good job with the site. I think practice will obviously be a little easier as well because, you know, you can only have two on the court. I think that is
That's what someone told me the other. I'm not sure if that's true. So, yeah, it's seemed like I practiced today, and it was probably easier than normal to get a court. But that's, you know, obviously people are on different timetables right now.
And I suppose different people are coming in at all the time.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah,
we're getting sort of little drip feeds of information about the rules and that sort of thing, but unofficially, what do you make of what you've received?
As in terms of the rules, or
yeah,
you know, like
I mean the way they're running it, and I mean, I suppose there was some concern about you've got to hold this bubble, haven't you, in order for this thing to work. The hope is that everybody just plays along and that sort of thing. I mean, have you read the rules? Do you feel comfortable with the rules?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you enter, I think you know what you're getting into. I don't think it's a massive thing, to be honest with you. If you're entering this tournament or these two tournaments, and you feel the need, you can't hold that bubble, then you know you probably shouldn't play. Me personally, I don't, you know, there's plenty of room in the hotel. It's not a small hotel, so you know you've got. It's not like you can only stay in the hotel. You obviously go to the courts as well, so you can, you know, you can juggle your time between the two. And I think, you know, you'd know what it's like to be at a tournament. A lot of the days at the courts, isn't it? So, you know, you're talking, you know, dinner, okay, a lot of room service, but there's still places downstairs where you can take dinner. You know, there's an outdoor area where you could take dinner as well. You know, it's a big hotel with a lot of space. Yeah, so that was my biggest thing, was that, you know, I didn't want to feel crammed, but and not a lot of space or anywhere to go get fresh air, but there is. So that was, I don't think anyone will break the bubble, to be honest.
Do you think it'll work? Do you think this will? I mean, I know it's very early days, and it's impossible to know, obviously. But what's your feeling about the way it comes across to you?
As in the tournament or the bubble? Or both?
I suppose both, really, because I mean it's we're unknown territory, aren't we? And I mean, it has worked in so far in other sports. We've seen it in Premier League in football. We've seen it, you know, the NBA basketball is ongoing at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will work if, you know, if people want it to work, it will work. I mean, obviously you've got some pretty, you know, there's obviously a few names which have dropped out, but I think you've got them. You know, Djokovic was there today. You've got some good players who are still playing the tournament and want to you know, win the tournament, both of them. So I think it will work. I mean, again, I think the player should really try and make it work for tennis. You know, like you just said, the other sports have, you know, got on with it. You know, it's obviously not easy, is it, to not play in front of crowds for, you know, the NBA and all the other sports. But, you know, I think the other sports have got good press from it. You know, the football Champions League the other night, it's been obviously pretty, you know, big games. And I think, you know, I think I said before that, you know, it'd be pretty iconic to see the final of US Open just for once with, you know, just once. Obviously it's forced, but with no crowd, that'd be a hell of a picture, I think.
Yeah, how have you found playing with no crowds? I mean, I know you've not played tour events, but you've played the Battle of the Brits,
yeah,
and that sort of thing. What do you think?
You know,
it'd be like?
It's obviously be very weird. You know, we practiced today on a court with a lot of seats, and you know, it's just something. You know, it's very different when the cameras are there. You still feel, you know, you still know that, you know, the cameras are there, and I still think people were feeling pressure out there. It's not like you've got no pressure, you know. It's, you know, that's, I think that thing, that theory of there's no pressure on certain people is not right. You know, there's still going to be huge points and huge moments in matches where people will be nervous. And so, I mean, in that sense, I think it will work. And yeah, I mean, hopefully this is, you know, one of the only tournaments and only year where this will have to happen.
And finally, how are you feeling? Because when we spoke exactly 5 months ago, I was looking when Indian Wells had just been cancelled, total unknowns. You know, you've had a good month or so. You've been driving all those other people up the wall at that team event. And now you're here.
Yeah, I think like the majority of people I've seen and watched and I think everyone's just happy to be back doing, you know, sort of what they wanted, what everyone wants to be doing, you know, back on the court, preparing for a tournament, for the tour to resume. I think that's the overall overriding like feeling for me anyway, is that, you know, we're back to what we want to do. You know, obviously the Battle of the Brits was great and good stuff, but you know, I mean, here, this is the proper tour, you know, this is where we all want to be, and you know, good chance to compete again.
Do you think you're in good shape for it?
I think so. I mean, you can never be sure, you know, but I mean, I feel pretty good. I think, you know, I think said before, you know, Jamie gave all the Brits a great opportunity to compete, and that definitely set us all, you know, in good standing regardless of levels people are going back to play at. You know, everyone got what they needed out of that, and along with obviously St George's Hill. So I think the Brits should hopefully get some good success when we get that player.
Good stuff. Well, thanks very much for that. Very interesting. And good luck.
Cheers, Dave.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
See you, mate. Bye.
See ya. So, Dan Evans inside the New York bubble. Thoughts, Catherine?
Wow. Okay. He gets to call you Dave. That's my current thought. Dave. Are you only allowed to call you Dave if you do it in a Brummy accent?
Correct, actually, yeah.
Dave.
The only people I let call me...
Nailed it.
Call me Dave is people who live around here. So, Catherine, you might earn yourself a little pass once a year,
Dave,
to do it.
Dave,
right? Right,
I like
you've used up 3 years' worth.
I liked... I mean, there is some sort of deadpan comedy gold in there. When you said, what is there to do? And he said, oh, there's a really big lobby.
Well, there is.
Look, I really like his attitude, actually. I like his... I know a lot of people are thinking, oh, why should we listen to Dan Evans? He's discredited or disgraced or whatever. Well, you know, he's been through something, which has obviously given him a better perspective on the sport and on life and on his place in it all. And he seems to have a pretty healthy appreciation of the big picture, really, and the intersection of the personal responsibility with the tournament's responsibility to the players and to the sport, and the fact that those two things are not mutually exclusive. I don't necessarily share his optimism about compliance, but I hope he's right. And I'm not enjoying the bandying around of the word overkill on social media in reference to the measures in place in the bubble. I mean, yeah, I mean, if it is overkill, great. I certainly don't want underkill. And in this sort of situation, isn't clarity what everybody wants? And I think kind of the only way to achieve clarity, I mean, we saw that with lockdown, is to be extreme with the rules and regulations. This is kind of a give people an inch or leave the interpretation of the rules up to people's common sense and, personal interpretation. And you just get lost in a quagmire. I feel like I've spent the last 2 to 3 months learning that. Some people think it's fine to go to the beach and frolic around like everything's normal. And some people, that enrages them more than anything, the fact that people are doing that. So I think strict clarity is pretty much the only way to do this.
And like you said, if you want to play, you know what you're getting yourself in for.
Absolutely. Everybody has the choice to play. I absolutely respect people's choice not to play. There's nothing hidden here. It's everybody knew what they were signing up for, and I think that's quite a mature approach from Dan, really.
Yeah, it's like Dan Evans all grown up. It's also like we've come a long way from those comments he made about Jamie Murray 18 months ago. Do you remember at the Australian Open? Now he's praising Jamie Murray very, very strongly and very rightly. But I think that's the point, isn't it? It's like full respect for people who decide not to go to New York. No respect for people who decide to go and break the bubble and mess up the rules. I think there will be no sympathy whatsoever. And quite rightly, he said, if people want it to work, it will work. And I think that was quite a good way of saying it. If people commit to this and do it properly, it can work. Personally, I mean, it sounds to me like a kind of really strict school trip where like all the tennis players are kind of bunking in this hotel together. And some players, like the prefects, have got houses of their own, but the rest of them, they're in this hotel and they've got to do as they're told. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be a test of endurance and stamina. I mean, as I said, I don't think anyone will be cutting anyone any slack if they do break the rules, but it is going to be quite challenging. You know, it's going to be a month if you want to get to the final of the US Open, pretty much. I wouldn't go as far as to say it's iconic, like Dan Evans is saying, but there is an element of added intrigue, I suppose.
You failed to mention to him that he was 300-1, David, and what he thought about that.
Oh, I
After winning the Battle of the Brits, he was 300-1.
Really? Well, I think that's I don't believe in betting. We don't take any betting on this podcast, but that sounds quite good.
I'm not suggesting you place the bet, David. I'm just using it as an objective marker of how the universe views his chances at the US Open.
Well, 18-year-old 1991 version of me would have been down the bookies placing that bet. I can promise you, back in the day when I was off the rails. But you're right. No, it is an interesting... I mean, that does seem a loss, doesn't it? I mean, I don't think he will win the US Open, but I would be surprised if he's that long now.
Can you text him and tell him he's 300-1 and see what his response is?
Do you know what,
please?
What I did text him afterwards that I forgot to ask him in the interview was, A, are you scared? Which he said no. Because I just wondered whether he was, you know.
And, No, Dave.
And then I asked, when will he next be tested and how often? And he wasn't 100% sure, but he thinks they get tested every 4 days. Is expectation, but not confirmed. So yeah, it'll be interesting, won't it? I mean, the whole story. Every day, the thing could blow up. I mean, we've seen positive tests in other sports and in other tennis events, and there is a strict process that they've got mapped out for what to do if that happens. We don't know all the details, but every day there's more to think about than just tennis matches.
I also think it needs to be made very clear to players, and I've no reason to think this isn't being made clear, but that a negative test doesn't make you bulletproof, doesn't mean you can behave as if you are risk-free. I think that's a very, very important point to make, because as we saw with, we're seeing it all over the board, but in terms of high-profile tennis cases, I think Goran Ivanisevic tested negative before testing positive. You can be pre-symptomatic or asymptomatic and still test negative. You can be in the incubation period stage and test negative. You are not bulletproof if you've had a recent negative test. You can still pose a risk to people, and I think it just worries me that point isn't getting across. You know, we saw yesterday on the snooker the MC giving Ronnie O'Sullivan a hug and then shouting, "Don't worry, we've both been tested." That is, I mean, just don't get me started on that. So yeah, I just hope that message is being communicated and put a, I'm sure it is, but you know, people have to listen. don't they? People have to listen. Yeah. Don't leave anything up to anybody's common sense would be my policy.
Okay. We'll pass that on. A couple of other final points on the ongoing subject of whether the US Open winners will have an asterisk against them. All a matter of opinion, of course. Pam Shriver has tweeted, yes, an asterisk for having an open mindset, resiliency and grit that should earn the athlete two major titles. This is our generation's toughest time. If you can succeed in 2020 with a US Open title, then you should be rewarded even more.
I think there is. I think there's a case to be made for that. That I'm not quite comfortable with some of the language there. The sort of resiliency and grit. The sort of reverse implication of that is that those of the elected not to play are lacking in grit or courage or resiliency. And I don't think that's. I'm sure that was an inadvertent implication, but I don't feel that way. I don't feel. Yeah, but absolutely, it's going to take something different and something big to win this US Open.
It's certainly going to be interesting, no matter what happens from here. Couple of pieces of sad news. Robert Ryland has died, aged 100 years of age. He was reported by the New York Times. He's reported as being the first Black professional tennis player and for many years a well-regarded coach of younger players and celebrities, died on August the 2nd at the age of 100. People stand on his shoulders, Leslie Allen said. People that don't even know who he is, but they stand on his shoulders today.
That's such a great line.
It is indeed. And Billie Jean King tweeted, Bob Ryland was barred from playing in whites only professional tennis leagues until the age of 40, when he became the first Black man to do so in 1959. He went on to coach some of the world's top players. Rest in peace to a true trailblazer. And also Angela Buxton, a former British tennis player who reached the Wimbledon singles final and also won the doubles alongside Althea Gibson, died at the age of 84, I think over the weekend, actually. And she and Billie Jean King paid tribute to her as well, said, saddened to hear of the passing of British tennis player Angela Buxton, friend and doubles partner of Althea Gibson. It was wonderful to spend time with her and hear her words about Althea at the unveiling of her statue at the US Open last year. Katrina Adams also said, my condolences to the family and friends of Angela Buxton after her passing. She was laid to rest today. Angela was a British tennis player who championed the friendship and support of Althea Gibson when no one else would in a racist era in our sport in the 1950s. Rest in peace. So that's Angela Buxton and Robert Ryland. A couple of final points before we finish off for another week here on the Tennis Podcast. Lars Graf, listener and supporter of ours for many, many years, and also chair umpire for 25 years at the top level on the ATP circuit. He's the new China Open tournament director in Beijing. So congratulations to Lars. It'll be kind of sad not to see him in chair umpire chairs anymore, won't it? I mean, he hasn't done that job as much of late. He's been an ATP supervisor, but we see him every year at Queen's. And hopefully you continue to listening to the Tennis Podcast, Lars.
There's no excuse,
right?
to not listen. We won't be accepting that as an excuse.
No, just because you got a new job doesn't mean you can't listen to us. So
one of my all-time favourite moments was David chasing Lars Graf for a picture through the O2, shouting his name.
You make me sound like a fanboy.
Yeah, that's a weird story, isn't it?
That was just for our social media channels.
Yes.
Sure.
Listener,
yeah, it's not framed on his wall.
I am not
a fan. Ali Nilly was a bit spooked as to what was going on.
I did get his autograph. No, didn't get his autograph. And just finally, I just want to say hello to Harry Bruce, a listener of ours who wrote over the weekend from a hospital bed in Melbourne. And he's post-surgery. He's obviously had a tough time of late, and Melbourne in lockdown at the moment because of COVID-19, and just sent us a lovely note to say that he's enjoying the coverage. It helps keep him company when obviously it's a lonely place to be at the moment, a hospital in Melbourne. And our very best wishes to you, Harry. Thanks very much for your note. And yeah, keep listening and we'll keep bringing you podcasts.
Thinking of you, Harry.
Yeah.
We can promise more podcasts, that is for sure.
That much we can. And we got one later this week, haven't we?
Yay. Yep.
Because it's going to be what can I call it? Pre-Cincinnati event in New York. Can I call it that?
I think Western and Southern must be absolutely beside themselves that people can no longer appropriately call this event Cincinnati. Because the sort of secondary option is to go for Western and Southern Open.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like, well, I managed to get through this whole week of Lexington coverage only saying the words bluegrass orthopedics once on air.
Well done. You said about eight times in last week's podcast. So you've got your
quota and no
in.
Free orthopedics arrived. So no,
I've had nothing. Yeah. So that didn't work. But we're going to preview the draws, have a little look at that. We're also going to feature our Lindsay Davenport interview that Catherine did a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago now, but a really good listen. We'll have that for you. And then more shows next week. And obviously next week, giving you an update on where things stand with the Western Southern Open. And then we'll be building up to daily shows at the US Open. And we've sorted Matt's accommodation. He's in a caravan, folks. We've got Matt a caravan for the US Open. Isn't that good?
I can't wait to make Bonquette jokes. I mean, I've got 2 weeks of Alan Partridge jokes lined up, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to say.
It's not New York, is it?
It's not quite New York. No, I'm going on an adventurous trip about 10 minutes from my house.
Yeah. We thought it'd be a bit too much to ask his parents to sort of handle us podcasting at 2 a.m. British time from the next door room. So we've hired Matt his own place for the fortnight, which means we'll be bringing you daily shows of the Tennis Podcast. Hope you're enjoying them. If you are, do leave us a review on iTunes. Do tell your friends if you want to hear dodgy Brummy accents from Catherine. You get everything on this show, and it's all tennis related, most of it anyway. See you next week.
Bye, Dave.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.